one another, and kind of legal ramifications and some legal guidelines that were put into place for our interpersonal relationships. And so we see all this going on at Mount Sinai. And so we're now at the point where Moses has been up on Mount Sinai. He was up there for 40 days. And while he was up there, he was getting the law from God. And God then affirmed this covenant with Israel. He says, look, my covenant with you is I'm going to go ahead of you. I'm going to send my angel into the land, and he's going to take care of the problem for you. You know, eventually they're going to move into the land of Canaan. They're going to take over the land and conquer the land. And God is saying, I'm going to send my angel in there ahead of you. He's going to take care of it all for you. Really, all you have to do is just go in there and take it. And God even really lays out this plan of how it's going to work. He talks about, look, you know, I'm going to take care of your health. I'm going to take care of you as far as the childbirth goes. And he lists out all these things. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Hey, cough drops.
Oh, awesome. Hey, cough drops are awesome. Thank you. And so God lays out all these things that that he says he will do for the people of Israel, if they would but follow his law and keep his commands. And so he's saying, look, all you have to do is just go in there and take it over. I'll handle everything. And so God lays out this nice plan of how he's going to make that happen. Israel then agrees to keep these laws. They say, look, everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient. And so it's so far, everything's great. You know, they're on a good roll, and they're making good progress. God also gives the design of the tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant. And this would be, we discussed that this would be where God dwelt among his people at that time. This is where he would dwell among them, where he would meet with them. And after Moses had been up on the mountain for 40 days, that's where we started running into problems. And that's where we kind of left off last week and where we'll pick up again tonight. So Moses had been up on the mountain for 40 days getting this law. And you remember God had given to him on these tablets of stone that God himself penned. And so they've been up there for a really long time. And Israel was kind of, you know, the people of Israel were thinking, something's happened to Moses. He's gone. He's been gone for 40 days. He went up on the mountain, and we can't go up there to check on him because God has said if anybody else comes up on the mountain, they're going to die. So, well, I guess we're just left to our own devices here. And that's when they demanded a god, and the golden calf came into being. But that's where we're gonna pick up on tonight. So we're probably going to... I know we went over some of this last week and read some of these tonight, so we'll quickly kind of read through these just to kind of bring us back up to speed. But Exodus 32, 1 through 2. Would somebody like to read for me? Verses 3 through 6.
Then all the people tore off the gold rings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. He took this from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made it into a golden calf.
Okay. Oh, that bullet wasn't supposed to show. I hate it when my PowerPoints don't do right. So, what was their reasoning? Well, obviously, we need a God to go before us. And that was what they said, right? They told Aaron, hey, look, Moses is gone. Come make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. And so we need a God that's going to go before us. You know, God said he's going to go before us. Well, we need a God that's going to do that. And so we need a God to go before us. But when at the base of it all, what was the reasoning here? What was their thinking? Yeah, they didn't know what had become of Moses, and so what did they need to do? Yeah, well, we got to do something, right? So can we say that we have to take matters into our own hands? We've got to figure this out for ourselves. God has seemed to abandon us. Moses is gone. We don't know what happened to him. Well, I guess we just got to come up with our own ideas here. Yeah? Can we sometimes be guilty of such things? I know I can. More times than I care to admit, I have found myself facing various situations in life, and instead of just waiting on the Lord or seeing how the Lord will desire to handle this, I get in there and I just start trying to force the matter. And we have that ability, right? We have that ability to jump in there and start, you know, pulling all the strings and flipping all the switches and doing whatever we feel we've got to do to fix this problem and make this problem work to our favor. We have that ability. We can. But is that always the wise move? Yes? No? Not always, right? Patience is a very difficult thing, isn't it? We don't like to wait. And I'd say that it's probably more difficult for the younger generations than it is for perhaps the older generations. You know, this day and time, everything just comes at the speed of light. My wife will tell you, it's not uncommon for me to be riding down the road and I see a sign or I see something and, I wonder what that is. Let me Google it real quick. I just had this, I've got to know. You know, I tend to be a Curious George type, and I see something, it interests me, and I want to know what that is. I want to know what that means. And so I Google everything all the time. I bet you I'll do tens of thousands of Google searches in a year's time. That's just the way I do things. And so it's nice, though, because I've got it right here in my hand. I've got tremendous amounts of information at my disposal at tremendous amounts of speed. I don't have to wait much anymore. When I go to a doctor's office or something like that where I actually do have to sit and wait, well, I can entertain myself right there in the palm of my hand. You know, the idea of just having to sit there and do nothing, it's a thing of the past. Yeah, I'm not tied to whatever magazines are there on the table or whatever's in the magazine rack. I can look at whatever I want because I've got the internet, I've got Facebook, I've got Twitter, you name it. I've got all these things I can look at to entertain myself. And so I have found myself sometimes if, let's say, I've a time where I may have forgotten my phone. Oh, man. Boy, it becomes a big drag, right? And so this day and time, we're so used to everything just being right there and now, and I need a solution now. There's nothing I can't look up now. I need to pay a bill. I don't have to mail it. I can just pay it online within seconds. It's done. You know, that's just the way our lives run today, and it's getting faster. You know, I'm in the software industry. That's one of my jobs, is to help people be able to solve solutions faster, faster and faster and faster. That's the world we live in. And so sometimes we have to overcome that. Sometimes we have to battle that urge. And that can be tough, especially when it's something that's having a real impact on our life. You know, and not an impact as in, oh, I just saw that sign. I'm really curious about what that event is going to be. I'd like to look it up, but I guess I'll have to wait to get home. You know, not those kind of things, but the doctors just informed me I have this disease. Or my child has done something. Or my wife has done something. Or my husband has done something. You know, very real situations. Very real things that have severe impacts on our life. And we just feel like we've got to jump in there and take control right now. It's a very difficult urge that we fight. And so I know I can find myself being guilty of this sometimes, but Isaiah 40 verse 31 tells us that those who wait upon the Lord will gain new strength. They'll mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. And there's a tremendous amount of truth to that. I have found in my own personal life that sometimes when there are things that are just completely and utterly out of my control, the best thing I've ever done is just sit back and wait for the Lord to handle it. And He always has. We can trust that, folks. Our Father is a good Father, and He's a powerful, powerful individual. There is nothing that is out of His abilities. And so we need to be careful that we don't try to confine Him to our little box of, well, this is what I understand. This is the way things work in my life. So therefore, I have to do it this way, and God will work through that. If we can take God out of the box, we can find ourselves in just a huge realm of possibility. And there, from that comes a lot of peace. I can run and not get tired. You know, I can walk and not become weary because I know that the Lord's got this. God's got this. And so there's a tremendous amount of comfort and peace that comes with just waiting on the Lord. And not feel like I've got to take the bull by the horn and just make it happen myself. Wrestle this thing to the ground. We often find ourselves, we often injure ourselves doing that and make things worse for us. And so this is what we see going on with the people of Israel here. 40 days is a long time. You know, it really is. I mean, it's a month. You know, I know, you know, many of us will look, November's going to be done here soon, and we'll look back and say, wow, where did November go? Many of us are sitting here saying, wow, where did 2016 go? You know, but 40 days is a long time to be waiting on something. And so Moses goes up on the mountain, he just disappears. They can't go check on him. And so, well, I guess we just need to take matters in our own hands. And so that's kind of the idea that we see going on here. And so a few points to consider on this, because after these points, I got some discussion questions that I hope generate some conversation. But before we get into those, just some things to consider. You know, worship of an idol was not a foreign thing to the Israelites at this time. To us, that it seems weird. You know, when somebody is worshiping some kind of a statue or some kind of just an object made of stone or metal or wood and truly are worshiping this thing, today you and I look at this and go, that's a piece of wood. I can kick it over. You know, that piece of wood's not going to do anything for you. That hunk of metal is not going to do anything for you. That was something that was made by a man. Somebody took that and carved it. You know, there's nothing special about it. We see that. But to these people, the worship of that kind of stuff was a common thing. They had been around it. They had probably been involved with it in some form or fashion. And so it was a common thing for them. So let's keep that in mind. You know, having something that was not seen, such as the God of heaven, who is spirit, that was a foreign concept. You know, all the religions that they had ever known and seen involved some kind of physical thing that could be seen and touched and bowed down to. That's just not the way it is with the God of heaven, though. He's not seen. He's spirit. And so following that was not a common thing for them. Aaron referred to the calf as the God who brought you out of Egypt. So let's keep that in mind. The people of Israel, they all knew that the God of heaven was the God that delivered them from Egypt. They saw the 10 plagues. They walked across on the dry land of an entire ocean splitting apart. That stuff could not be denied. There was no statue. There was no hunk of wood or metal that made all that stuff happen for them. So they knew, you know, they saw the pillar of fire. They saw the pillar of cloud. They saw these things. And so they knew that the God of heaven had done all this. And Aaron seems to be referring to that. Behold, Israel, here's this calf I made for you. This is the God that brought you out of Egypt. And then he says, tomorrow we'll have a feast to not the statue, but to the Lord. And so the point I'm trying to make here is there seemed to be some tying together of the two here. So now, having said that, do you think the Israelites were wanting a new God here? Or do you think they were using this statue as perhaps a representation of God himself? You know, leaving Egypt, God led them by what? A pillar of what by day? Of cloud. And a pillar of what by night? A fire. Yeah. So, you know, they had been seeing something. They'd been following something. Oh, there's this pillar of fire. That's God. He's going before us. He's leading us. He's a blazing ball of fire. We're safe. We can follow that. You know, they had something that they could set eyes on and look to. And so I'm pondering here, if in the desire to have this golden image, it wasn't necessarily, hey, let's make up this new God that's going to lead us. Instead, it seems like they were looking for some kind of physical form of the God that had brought them out of Egypt. Thoughts? It replaced Moses. Okay, yeah. No, you don't want one. Okay, yeah, I could go with that. They definitely looked to Moses as a leader. They certainly did. And so, yeah, absolutely. Mike?
Mm-hmm. In Egypt. So they were really reverting back.
Yes.
Something they had learned when they were in the pillar of fire and cloud. They're going back in their minds to the God they had in Egypt.
Yes.
They didn't treat them too well.
Yes. They're trying to relate it back. And, you know, we often see the form of a cow or a bull, something like that, is being used in many of the idolistic gods and the pagan gods. You know, there was a symbol, it was a symbol of strength, fertility. You know, it's kind of what we see a bull being associated with in those pagan religions. And we see that these things, these cows, bulls were an animal that was frequently and commonly sacrificed as opposed to other things. And so, yeah, they were. I think there was a lot of reverting back here, but I get the idea that they were trying to bring their two worlds together. You know, they had seen all these things happen. Obviously, there was this God. We heard his voice. He talked to us from the mountains. We asked Moses, hey, don't let him speak to us anymore. You know, you just go talk to him and let us know what he said. And so they knew this, and they knew that this God was leading them, but, well, right now he's off with Moses somewhere, and they both seem to have disappeared. And so we need something here, you know, some kind of form. So I get the idea that they might have been trying to bring those two worlds together in some way or another. But if that be the case, and again, this is all just hypothetical here for discussion. If that be the case, how did God feel about that idol, even if it represented himself? Yeah. Yeah. He said that they had broken a commandment, didn't he? You know, he was not too pleased about that. Even if, again, this is hypothetically speaking, just for discussion's sake, even if it was supposed to be some kind of representation of him, he was not pleased with that. And indeed, that was a violation of the first commandment according to the way God viewed this situation. And so what about us? Are there some things today that could serve as such idols to us?
Well, common thing, money.
Money, okay. What about, you know, something I hear, I've heard a lot over the years of my life in the church is sometimes people are concerned about the symbol of a cross becoming an idolistic thing. You know, I've heard many people suggest that, hey, it probably wouldn't be too wise to, you know, maybe put a cross up front because people might start seeing that as some kind of idol symbol. And me, you know, I wouldn't necessarily look at the cross that way, but I could definitely see where people might do that. You know, where this thing, this wooden item might become a thing that is worshipped. Even though it has ties to Jesus, ties to salvation, ties to redemption. This wooden thing is a physical thing I can see and I can come and I can kneel before and pray before. Or, you know, I can see that happening. Perhaps there are people who do that. Yeah?
Philip Keller, in his book on idolatry,
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it can be anything that stands between us, or and even if it seems to be a holy thing, right? Even something that, well this is the cross. Jesus died on the cross. Wow. You know? So I think we have to exercise some caution here, and that we to be very cautious that we don't allow these symbols and these things to become a earthly representation for us. Right? That to where it replaces God. Does that make sense? You know, if that's the case here, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think there could be a difference too between something that is a reminder.
Mm-hmm.
Which a cross could be, a reminder of God, Christ died on the cross.
Yes.
And being here, they were putting their cross.
That's correct. Yes.
So there's more to it. And even the money thing, you know, when you put your trust in your money, that's what's going to take care of you.
Right.
When things get tough. You've got enough money, you're fine.
Right. Yeah.
That can be.
Absolutely. Yeah, but we see a lot of symbols like this in the scriptures, right? Remember, it's pretty common in the Old Testament, especially through the story of the Exodus and into Joshua. It's not uncommon for, let's say, some major event happens. I can't remember if it happened or not here, but let's say like the parting of the Red Sea. Something that was commonly done was wherever that event took place, an altar was built there. Or some stones were piled up, you know, to commemorate that this was, I built this altar here and the place was named this because this happened here. We see that happening frequently throughout the scriptures. Such is not idolistic, right? Yeah, Moses built altars. So, you know, such things like that as a symbol or a reminder, yeah, just fine. I had a professor at Faulkner, I may have told this story in here before. He was one of the Bible professors, and so on Faulkner's campus, Tiffany and Alicia will remember this, that they had this building called the Rotunda. It was a round building, and back in my day there, it eventually got moved to the gym, but back when I was there, chapel was held in the Rotunda. There was an auditorium in the middle, and that's where we had chapel every day. Well, there were like at least four different entrances to this building, and on one of the entrances, as you came in, there was a brick in the wall that somebody had painted blue sometime in the past. You guys remember that brick? Somebody had painted it blue. I have no idea why or how long it had been done. But I had one of my Bible professors said that he kind of used that as just a reminder every day that, hey, I'm a child of God, or something of that nature. You know, it was just something that he saw because he walked past it every day coming in chapel. That's just the door he came into. And he just used that as a reminder. It was kind of like having a string tied around your finger, you know, just some kind of reminder. Not an idol. He didn't worship the thing, but yeah, it was just a symbol, something that reminded him. So there's certainly nothing wrong with having these symbols and these reminders to maybe bring our minds back to something or to recall something. But we have to be very careful that we don't allow that to transition into something that starts to take place of God. Some kind of physical earthly representation.
One thing you have to keep in mind also is that God is an all-seeing and all-knowing God.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is, he's bringing these people out of Egypt, who's been in this culture with idols and what have you for eons. And now he's taking them out here, and they're coming to a point that they're going to have to execute certain of his commands on blind faith.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they were going to revert back to something.
Yes.
And in the meantime, he's watching this from above, and he's up here having Moses carve out the Ten Commandments, one of which is put the graven idols before me.
Right.
And so Moses comes down, and all of this happened. You know, a great lesson was taught to the Israelites not to put anything before me.
Right.
Yes,
Absolutely.
And you know, he's got a lot of people there that he's trying to guide.
Yeah.
And he's got to teach them some lessons along the way.
Yes.
Just like we have to learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good point. All right, so God responds to the golden calf in Exodus 32, verses 7 through 10, just continuing on reading. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, "Go down at once, for your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt.' The Lord said to Moses, 'I have seen this people, and behold, they are obstinate people. Now then, let me alone that my anger may burn against them, and that I may destroy them, and I will make of you a great nation.'" Does that sound familiar? Where have we heard that before? Who did God tell that to? Abraham. Yeah, he said, "I'm going to make of you a great nation." That was one of the promises, right? God's sitting here saying, "You know what? I'll just start all over with you. No skin off my teeth," you know, and so that's kind of what we see God going with this. And so reading on, then Moses entreated the Lord as God and said, "O Lord, why does your anger burn against your people whom you have brought up out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak, saying, 'With evil intent he brought them out to kill them in the mountains and to destroy them off the face of the earth'? Turn from your burning anger and change your mind about doing harm to your people." What was Moses' concern here? Yeah. He's saying, "Look, Lord, this isn't going to look so well. I hear what you're saying." And as we read on, we see Moses was quite ticked off with him as well. And Moses handled the situation when he got down to the bottom of the mountain, quite violently, rather. And but he says, "Look, you can't just come out here and wipe them all out. I don't know that this is a really good idea, because what's that going to say to the Egyptians? Right now, the Egyptians are seeing all the powers that you worked in them and all the way you displayed your power and might. If you come out here and just wipe them all out now, they're going to make a mockery of you." And so really interesting conversation here. Yes.
God is painting a picture for all nations.
Yes. Absolutely. And so Moses continues, is here still talking to the Lord. He says, "Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants." Israel, they're referring to Jacob. "Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by yourself and said to them, 'I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven, and all this land of which I have spoken, I will give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever.'" Had God gone through and just wiped all of Israel out, would that have changed that? Not really. You know, Moses is a descendant of these guys. And as God said to him earlier, "I'll just make of you a great nation. I'll just keep marching forward towards the cross. I'll just start it all over with you. I'll have another reboot." You know, we talked about the flood being that divine reboot, right? Where God said, "I'm just going to start all over." He'd do it again. He wasn't afraid to. But Moses talks with the Lord here and has this very intimate conversation with God. And it says, "So the Lord changed his mind about the harm which he said he would do to his people." What are your thoughts on Moses' entreaty and his talking with God? What does that bring to your mind? What do you think? You know, and notice how he takes it back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What do you think? You think that sounds rather bold? Yes, sir.
I think he could have been testing Moses' leadership.
Okay.
Because, you know, it takes leadership to stand up and defend the people you've got there.
Sure, okay, yeah.
And say, "Hey,
okay, I can see that, sure. God tested Moses and so. Yes, indeed it did. Absolutely. Very good point. And we you know, we saw God do that a lot with Joseph. And even with Abraham to some extent, but especially with Joseph, you know, kind of putting him through the ringer on many things, but you know, helping to mold Joseph into the role and the leadership man, the leader that God needed him to be. Brent, you have your hand up?
Moses was like, no, I don't need that.
Yeah. Right. Sure. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Who else does it remind you of? Is there another story that sounds similar to? Who else spoke with God in such ways and questioned God? Oh, God, are you sure you want to do that? Yeah, Abraham, right, with Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember that? Genesis 18, 16 through 33. Abraham is really entreating the Lord there on the doom of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so we see that there was a relationship there, just as you said, B. You know, there was a very similar relationship that Abraham had with God and that Moses also had with God. You know, I personally would be afraid to say something like that to the Lord. I want to have that kind of relationship that Moses had. And I think as I grow in my faith and I grow in my walk with the Lord, I'll reach that point. And I find myself reaching that point in my own life this very moment. But, you know, to say, now, Lord, you might really want to think about what you're doing here. You know, don't strike me, right? Clearly there was this very intimate relationship that Moses had with the Lord. And I think you've made a great point, really hit the nail on the head. There was this very intimate relationship. And we see more conversations like that between the Lord and Moses as we go on. What are your thoughts on God changing his mind? This is just purely up for discussion here. Go ahead. Not looking for right or wrong.
You know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like if you're in charge of a group of people or you're in charge of us here tonight, we start doing something wrong. And you turn away and you say, oh, God, please help me manage this and get back on track, get Tom Dillon to shut up his mouth. And
yes.
And you know, God had to know at that time that God loved, that Moses loved the people out there enough to take them on.
Yeah.
And that he would let him know if things were going wrong.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of lessons to learn in that.
There are. What's that say? Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Is that not why we pray, right? Sure. Yeah, and that's, you know, that was my next point of question, which I'm glad it naturally flowed into that, you know. Can our prayers be effective in changing the mind of God? But does the idea of God changing his mind minimize the idea of God's omniscience? You know, this sometimes it can be a challenging thing to people. I've had a lot of people say, well, Kirk, you tell me that God knows everything, so what's the point? Why should I pray? He already knows what he's going to do anyways. He already knows the plan, what the outcome is. That's a tough question to answer. It really is. And that may start to move over into some areas that we have to feel like squirrely on. But that, to me, I brush that one off. There's just some things that we're meant to know and some things we're not meant to know. But me personally, I don't necessarily feel that it messes around with the whole idea of him being omniscient. You know? There's a lot of things I know, far more than my children know. But when they come and ask me to do something different, okay. You know, the overall goal of what I want to do might still take place, just but through a different route, maybe. You know, it doesn't necessarily change the omniscient nature.
He is a God of mercy.
He is a God of mercy, yes. Yeah, and, you know, I think we also have to keep in mind that sometimes when things are going awry in our life, it's not necessarily because God made it that way. You know, we've discussed in here earlier on in our studies. Mike, you look like you want to say something. I'll get to you in just a second if you can give me just a minute. Earlier on in our studies on this, you remember we talked about sin and how sin affects our life. Sometimes sin affects us directly, just as a direct consequence of I did something stupid, therefore bad things are going to happen to me. Sometimes we're affected by an indirect result of sin. I'm at a gas station, I walk inside to buy a Coke, and while I'm in there at the cash register, somebody walks in with a gun and holds the whole place up and tries to rob the place. I didn't do anything wrong. I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I'm being affected indirectly because of the sin of another. And then also we see that sin has an effect on us just through the natural way that the world is. Genesis 3:6, again, it changed everything. Our world became a very cursed place to live. And so because of that, sin affects us in that regard as well. Mike? Okay. And so, you know, when we think about those things, it's not necessarily that well, this is the way God wants it, and we got to change his mind. You know, sometimes it's just the way things take place due to the effect of sin on the world. But we have a Father. We have a great physician. We have an almighty one who can change it all. Why not ask him to change it? Any other thoughts? Mike, you sure you don't want to share?
I think this is a learning experience. When Michelle was little, she would come in, sit on my lap, and start talking about a subject. I knew more about the subject than she did. But I left the question because it helped her.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, sometimes the scripture certainly supports the idea that God allows us to be tested. And it's through those trials and tribulations that we're made more perfect and that our endurance is increased. Paul talked a lot about that. You know, it's through our tribulations that our endurance is increased. And so, yeah, perhaps, you know, God is using these things. He wants us just to come ask because I'm trying to teach you something. I'm trying to grow you. Yeah, sure. Okay, great point. Very good point. All right, guys. Well, we'll pick up there next week. I had still like another 10 or 15 slides to go, but we'll pick up there next week. Thank you.